All right. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby. My special guest today is Duka Geersma. Did I get that right?
More or less. All good. Thanks for the invitation. Thanks for being on the show.
No problem. Well, great to have you. So Duka is the co-founder and CEO of We Are Keen, based in Amsterdam with clients throughout Europe. We Are Keen provides RPO services to fast-scaling technology companies, and they have a community of well-trained tech recruiters, and they also offer training and masterclasses to upskill recruiters. Now, before becoming an entrepreneur, Duka worked in the staffing industry for over 10 years. He's held several international leadership roles, mostly focused on new business development and building sales teams. And in his last position, Duka helped set up a new entity in Germany. So, Duka, welcome. Great to have you.
Thanks, Mark.
I tried messaging you earlier, and autocorrect really struggled with your name. So if people are looking you up on LinkedIn,
yeah,
it's D-O-E-K-E is yeah. Duka. And then Geersma is G-E-E-R-T-S-M-A. And yeah. I apologize if my pronunciation is off, by the way.
No. It's good, right? We're from different countries. We have different pronunciation, languages, names, right, and so on. Let's embrace the diversity here. It's all good.
Right. Absolutely. I love Amsterdam. It's one of my favorite cities. And I remember I stayed once in a hotel on, I think it was called Katzengracht, or I'm not sure if I'm getting that street name right. And the taxi driver told me that it stands for, that the street is basically means two cats having sex or something like that.
Have you heard of this? Kattengracht, probably. Well, I'm I'm not too sure if he's playing tricks on you or not, but it's a good area of the city, that's for sure. It's a nice place.
It was pretty cool. So you were referred to me by Adrian Kolf at Matcher. What's your connection with them?
Well, I think one of the things which I find really interesting about the recruitment industry, possibly more so in the Netherlands, but definitely on a European level as well, is that it's quite a dense community, right? And a lot of people are involved in the network and trying to add value and so on. And with Adrian, he's basically another entrepreneur in the recruitment industry, more or less in the same area where we do stuff. We have a different approach, different ideas, that's how we connected, and we just exchanged messages. Sometimes I help him, sometimes he helped me out a little bit. So I guess we're sort of friendly entrepreneurs, and he's a really nice guy, so that helps a lot.
Yeah, he super nice folks over at Matcher. Don't you sort of compete or overlap in terms of what you do? Maybe actually you could start by explaining your business model at We Are Keen.
Yeah, sure. Well, like you did in your introduction as well, right? I think most people refer to RPO. We tend to call it embedded talent acquisition. So what we try to do, like we support usually fast-growing tech companies who've usually just did an acquisition, picked up a funding round, and with this funding, they need to scale their teams. There's a few things that can happen, right? Depends a little bit on what they're trying to scale, right? Is it their people team, is it tech, is it product team, etc. But basically, we usually come in when they have a really massive peak in their demand, and they're looking to basically add extra specialized capacity to their recruitment teams, and or extend their recruitment teams. So that's usually when we come in with our tech recruiters. We embed them into their teams, which nowadays is usually virtual. Unfortunately, but the idea is the same. So we buddy up with existing teams, and we talk directly to the stakeholders, etc., to get a really good understanding of their needs and their demands are. And then we help them scale for a period of time. Usually projects run anything between 6 to 18 months, basically. That's the nature of our business model. It's a subscription-based model. I guess the overlay with these types of other companies, of course, there are more, is that if you look at all the activity that's going on in the European scene with money coming in, companies scaling and reaching different statuses, a unicorn level or even way before, there seems to be a real need for specialized tech recruitment, usually for a certain period of time, right? So some teams need to scale their teams on a permanent side as well, but usually whilst getting there, they can't afford to wait till they have the permanent team in place. And that's usually when they reach out to us, hey, can you help us scale? We just need to hit the ground running. Let's get a team up and running, I don't know, next week or next 2 weeks, so we can hit on our milestones, basically, in terms of hiring. And then along the way, when they do start hiring their own teams as well, it's sort of like a fade-in, fade-out model almost, I would say, right? So we have a large team on site. We help them with the hiring, sometimes with the processes, sometimes with employee branding, sometimes with a bit of their IT, et cetera. And it allows them as well to work on their internal processes, et cetera, and to build their own teams usually. And then that's completely fine with us, right? So we're completely fine with sort of zooming out or fading out again after a certain period of time. And then they can have their own teams up and running. And we've just been the sort of, well, the enabler in that sort of, in that that time in between, I would say.
Wow, that's super cool. So you're saying it's an embedded model. It's on a subscription basis. Contract might be 6 to 18 months. And it's in particular to meet the demand of a company that's scaling very rapidly. Their infrastructure, their own recruiting teams, they don't have time to build those teams. So essentially they would get We Are Keen involved. And do you do the entire thing, or you work alongside, they might have a small recruiting team, or like, or do you own the recruiting function completely?
Well, that's very different, I would say, per phase of the company. Because what you see is like if companies are a bit like further in their development, in their growth phase, basically, they usually already have like teams in place, they have processes in place. So sometimes they create like a carve out. So we have, I know we're launching a tech hub in Lisbon or in Poznan, Poland, or wherever, and it's a really clear, well-defined project carve out, and we want your team to be deployed to do the hiring over there. When companies are usually a little bit smaller, right, and they might not have really well-defined processes yet, or they're struggling a little bit with employer brand, and they're just trying to figure out things, we could like take over the complete function. But in most of the cases, because we're working with slightly more, let's say, developed or slightly more mature skill-ups, I would like to call them. And the most basic processes are already in place. So then it's usually a project or a carve-out that we tend to work on. And if companies are slightly smaller, then it becomes like a really fluid model, right? So we have the team of our partner, we have our team, they really like come together, they buddy up, right? With usually certain domains, right, within their hiring. And then from there on, we just help them out with really extra capacity and extra recruitment power, basically.
Wow.
But so we're never in between, right? It's not like we do the sourcing and then we bump it up into their inbox and hope that the magic happens, basically. So we do the one thing that we always do is end to end, right? So we want to do end to end recruitment.
What do you mean by that, end to end?
Well, then we want to be in contact, let's say, as an example, we want to talk to the stakeholder. We want to get a really clear overview of what are the recs and the specs of a specific job, and then own that process in terms of also doing the reach out, usually specifically tech and product hiring, the sourcing and so on, and until offer stage. And of course, again, it depends a little bit on what the setup is. So where are the cuts in the process, depending on the company that you're working with. But that's usually where we can provide the most added value, basically.
Interesting. So why did you decide on this business model instead of running a more traditional, you know, recruiting and staffing company?
Well, yeah, interesting question. Well, I worked at a relatively large staffing company. It wasn't when I started, actually. I think there were like 50 people. When I left, there were close to 1,200, 1,500 people or so. So we saw a tremendous growth across Europe, actually. And one of the last assignments I did for them, and that's how I really got sort of into the tech scene more or less, was that I had to set up shop in Germany with as part of a team. And I ended up in Berlin, which is a city I absolutely, absolutely love. And obviously, there's such a thriving, dynamic tech scene in Berlin. And so we started supporting the larger companies there, as well as smaller companies. But and like SoundCloud was really hot back then. Zalando was skating like crazy. Delivery Hero was doing amazing things already with some of their delivery services with Foodora and so on. So there was a lot of activity there. And what I saw happening there, because usually then with the proposition of my former employer was that we really were helping out in low entry-level jobs, so either couriers or customer service, customer success type of jobs. But usually when I was having conversations with, I don't know, VPs of people or talent directors, whatever, the conversation usually gradually turned into, hey, we also have some serious challenges on the tech and product side. Would that be something where you could support up with as well? And that was not really part of the proposition that we had. And at the same time, usually when we then would be walking out the door, they would be asking, hey, hey, if you know like a really good tech recruiter, well, just let me know. It'd be great that if you could add someone to the team. Well, I heard it once, I heard it twice, I heard it 10 times. And I was like, what's going on here, right? What are you all doing here? And in the course of the few years that I was fortunate enough to spend time in Berlin, you can just see this sort of evolving. So there would be one company with massive growth, they picked up some funding, and then for a very relatively short moment of time, they would need basically the hyper expertise of tech recruiters, right? And you can just see them struggling. The struggle was always the same, because then they would start looking for people, they weren't there. They would start hooking up agencies. Of course, there were agencies, but it would not per se solve the issue, because then they would start working with, let's say, 5 or 10 different agencies. And the amount of work would not necessarily decrease, because then they would have like 10 different contact persons from 10 different agencies trying to support them with people. And more often than not, they would get sort of offered the same people as well. So the added value there, of course, is there, but it's very different from what I feel from our model, because with our model, it allows us to be really on site with our partner. We get a really good understanding of what it is that we're after. We have direct exposure to their hiring managers. So we get a really close and clear understanding of what it is that really helps them out, basically. And because we're in between, it doesn't force them to start talking to, let's say, 10 agencies, because there's such a high demand that they don't know where to start, or they don't know where to end either, basically. And from a business model perspective, I feel easy that I say it, obviously, but we can provide way, way, way better value for money in that sense, because we have people on site. Like I said, it's a subscription-based model, so it's clear what are the costs up front. So in terms of adding value and doing it against a specific pricing, we feel that we have a model in place that really helps and supports our partners, basically.
Awesome. So you saw this dynamic happening when you're in Berlin. There would be growing tech companies where there would be this massive spike in their hyring needs. They're going through hyper growth, and the solutions available to them were not meeting their needs. They were struggling to find enough, especially technology hires. So you identified this gap in the market and thought, you know, we could deliver something here which is going to solve this problem. When did this light bulb happen, and when did you kind of officially launch the business then?
Oh, yeah, cool. Well, it was basically, when I spent some time in Berlin, obviously, I got sort of to know the scene or the network there a little bit, and then started talking to all these people. So what are your needs? And obviously, my mind was already quite focused on recruitment. I'd known for quite some time back then that, well, there was sort of a dream or an idea or a vision of mine to start my own business, to become basically an entrepreneur, because I really liked that energy, that dynamic that I saw happening around me, albeit in the tech space. And that, like, we're not a tech company, obviously. We're like I think 100% people company. So I guess sort of it was a gradual process of talking to those people. So what it is exactly that you need? And obviously there was this on the one side is really high demand, and on the other side there was a scarcity of good recruiters, of people who know what they were doing, who like what they are doing, right? And that's where I think the real connection came, because I've always been really interested in developing people, in developing learning programs, in allowing people to learn, to make mistakes, but moreover, to really upskill themselves, like from a specific level into another level. So that's why we came up with the idea, why don't we design a tailor-made program to upskill recruiters, specifically not with the idea to have, let's say, juniors or graduates coming out of university, because, like, I'm not sure what happened to you, but, like, I don't meet too many people who are in college or in university. I want to be a recruiter. This usually sort of happens, right? And you could have different backgrounds, right. But then all of a sudden you end up working for usually an agency, and then what we saw happening, there's usually sort of a tipping point, let's say, anywhere between the first year or the third year that you're in sort of a recruiter position in which way or form. And then you think, oh my God, I really like doing this, right? This is something that I really enjoy doing. And that's usually sort of the tipping point that they see that, hey, but how can I now make sure that I become the best as I can be within this profession, right? And then they start looking around. Are there other companies where I have more learning abilities, and something which I think is really that you see happening a lot within sort of the new generation, more or less, right? That they're really keen to start learning, to start developing, to start upskilling themselves. So we really thought that. So there's so many people starting recruitment without a preset idea, I want to be a recruiter. Then after year two or three, well, they know the basics, right? They know how to do a conversation. They know perhaps how to talk to a stakeholder or client, depending on the position that you might have. So why don't we design a program that we can sort of get these people, which is the sweet spot, let's say 2 to 3 years, whatever, who know the basics, but moreover, they know by heart, because they've been doing it for some time, that this is the job that they want to do, and now they just want to be really, really good at it, right? So that's how we sort of design a program which would allow us to provide the people working for us with a really steep learning curve. So let's say their entry level would be here, and then within a 12-month period, we try to achieve a really steep learning curve for them. On the one side, providing them with in-depth trainings by TA professionals, so people who have a really nice track record within recruitment, led global teams, develop TA functions, whatever, and provide them with coaching. So everybody struggles sometimes, right? You know, sometimes you just need a peer, and it's like just really like to get ahead in your work, basically. And obviously, at the same time, provide them with cool assignments at cool companies, so they can actually experience what it is to either go through hypergrowth, set up a TA function, do whatever is necessary to get the job done, basically. And we thought we sort of try to create the best of both worlds, with a learning environment and an on-the-job assignment, and then combine them to make sure that our people that's at least in our opinion, would have the best possible path to success, or to become, I guess you could call it, like the best versions of themselves from a professional's perspective, but also from a personal perspective, personal development perspective.
This is a genius business model, because what you're essentially you're developing your own talent pool of tech recruiters who you know the standard that they've that you know they're competent and so on, because you've trained them, right? Is this how does it actually work? Do recruiters take the masterclasses that you offer before you decide to work with them and actually embed them with one of your clients? Or like, is it a separate revenue stream, or do you only train them after they join you? How does it all fit together?
Well, we've been playing around with the Keen Academy. Like it's an integral part. Like it's really to the core values, core pillars of who we are with Keen. And so we've now labeled it the Keen Academy. So from day one, it's been basically set up primarily to train our own people, because we feel it's important that we just want to safeguard as well the quality that we offer to our partners, obviously. the end of 2019, we said, like, well, there's so much sort of demand from the market. And we were getting so many questions from TA leaders. Hey, can you train my team as well? I saw this module. I saw this masterclass. I heard people talking about it. Could you offer to us as well? So we played around with basically opening it up to the market to see if we could really generate a revenue stream around it. And then basically COVID happened, and that which sort of forced us to speed up the process a little bit, but moreover to go online with this model. So I think like within the first month of the lockdown here in the Netherlands, we were doing online masterclasses, which we opened up to the market to see if we can like really set up a specific revenue stream for this. And I think in the course of 3-4 months, we've trained close to 300 to 400 people from like 20 plus countries. So it was quite interesting journey to go through. But we decided not to really double down that path because we felt it was sort of like with Keen, we're a really strong believer in it might be a Dutch expression, but hocus pocus focus. So do one thing extremely well and not a couple of things, basically. So although we learned a lot with this online masterclasses concept, basically from a sales perspective, we didn't feel that it was contributing enough to our core business, basically. And to a certain extent, even was sort of leading away more to the business development side of it instead of the personable and the learning development side of things, right? So to answer your question, no, we've decided not to really separately position it as a continuous revenue stream. So it's still primarily set in learning our own internal team to get better at what they do. We will be offering sort of a free version of the masterclasses in the course of this year. And the only sort of revenue stream that we generate off of it is based sort of if companies approach us, hey, could you train like an in-house train? So could you train my team the next couple of months or on this specific topic, or would like to have, let's say, a part of the whole program. So to give you an example, there's a big bank here in the Netherlands called the Rabobank. It's one of the biggest bank of the Netherlands. They have an internal recruitment team of 60 people, which just trained those 60 people in conducting online interview trainings to get the standards right, scorecards, smart, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll probably go down with some other trainings with them as well. We've trained the complete sourcing teams of Accenture, of Just Eat Takeaway. So there are some projects there, but they're more or less, I would be inclined to say, they sort of happen more or less. So it's not I don't have in my budget for 2021, I want to have sold X amount of internal trainings. It sort of more or less happens because we think it's extremely fun to do. We work with some extremely talented, nice talent acquisition professionals who love sharing their experiences as well. Of course, if we do that, we try to make a bit of money out of it, and that's completely fine. We're completely transparent about it, obviously, but it's not a core revenue stream of Keen.
Got it. Okay, so the core revenue stream is this embedded tech recruiting subscription-based model for fast-growing companies. And what are the biggest challenges or roadblocks that you have had to overcome in order to get this business off the ground and working well?
Yeah, interesting question. Well, like the thing what we thought was extremely important for us, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs, founders, business owners, whatever would say so, is that to me, specifically being in the recruitment industry, it's a service business, right? So it's a non-tangible thing, right? So I'm not selling you a bike and you think it's an amazing bike or it's a crappy bike, right? So we're talking about people here and about services here. So to me, what's extremely important, and to my other co-founders, obviously, as well, was that we felt that if we could offer a specific quality of services, that this would allow us for let's say it's a bit of a popular thing to say, but for a really sustainable growth path, right? And obviously, like dealing with the companies that we're dealing with, right? They're usually like, they picked up, I don't know, 100 million, they picked up 20 million, and they need to double down their team from 50 people to 250 people, right? You need to really tap into that into that, that dynamic that what we can offer and et cetera, right? So I think quality is in that sense been really, really important, been like sort of top priority. So one. I think what to us is really important, and I think hopefully that sort of taps into the quality aspect a little bit as well, that some of the larger companies that we've been working for with, we've been fortunate enough to work with from day one, they are still our clients after 3 years, right? So to us, and I know this is a popular thing to say, some that partnership, but we feel that we want to work with a company for a specific period of time, and that could be a high peak, and then it could be like, it could be a little bit less demand. But then if the demand is back, then we want them to call us again, you know what I mean? So that's how we look at building our portfolio of partnerships across a longer period of time. And then to come back to your question, what is sort of the hurdles or the things that we've been struggling with is obviously from our side as well, we want to attract the right people to our business who we feel can sort of act as an ambassador, I'd like to say, on site with our clients, and that they really that they really talk about their sort of keenness of that's one of the keenies. They're great. They're doing an amazing job. They let them be, basically, right? So that's what we're trying to achieve. And obviously, last year was tricky because 2 weeks after lockdown, 60% of our business was sort of put on hold, more or less, or killed, or non-existent anymore, whatever you want to frame it. So that really, we really had to readjust, right? So what are we going to do? So our cost level's here and our revenue stream just went from here to here, basically. So you need to adjust, right? And I think to me, that was a really, I wouldn't say pivotal, but it was really interesting to see both internally as externally. So which people can you really rely on and can you work on and are really sort of, putting their money where their mouth is, more or less, right? So it was some companies who we worked with, they said like, oh my God, everything's on a freeze. And I mean, I didn't blame them for anything, don't get me wrong, right? But it is like, we just need to stop right now. And there was also some other companies, which I would then sort of refer to as partners, who said like, Duke, we're in this together. You helped us out when we were in sort of in need. Now it seems that you're in a slightly different position. So, and we're not giving away anything for free here, right? But we really want to think with you, and we'll do everything what's in our ability to make sure that we can continue on the path that we've decided to go down together, and basically have your people remain on board. And that was I think one of the most sort of important lessons, or perhaps even most valuable insights that I gained from the last year as well. That, like, if you really help your partners out when they are in need, that usually comes back in any way or shape or form, right? So it could either be that they said, I'm sorry, we really have to let these people go because we have 10 recruiters of our own and they're not doing anything, so I can't have your recruiters stay on board. But what we will do, coming back to those masterclass as well, we'll hook up our team with, because they don't have anything to do anyway because there's a hiring freeze. So we want to invest in them. If you can offer them a cool module or some cool masterclasses the next couple of months, we'll make sure that our teams will be participating. So it was a little bit of give and take. And what I also found really interesting I made a mistake, or I did something that didn't really work. So like the lockdown happened, and my default reaction was, I'm going to do sales because there's no business. So what are you going to do? You're going to do sales, right? But obviously nobody was open or was able to do anything with sales because we were in a completely new situation with the lockdown, with the pandemic, with complete uncertainty around what was going to happen. So I tried that for 2 weeks. That didn't work. And then me and the team started thinking, so what can we do to make sure that we try to be of added value to the community, right? So we've been supporting recruiters to grow, to learn, to get a new job, whatever. So that's when we kicked off the Keen webinar series really pragmatic approaches around specific topic, like snackable content around lunchtime, where industry leaders would share their ideas and thoughts and really practical information on how people who had lost their jobs, were out of a job, or on a hiring freeze, or were in whichever way or form were struggling to get by, basically, and to get some new insights, to learn, etc. And at the end of the day, I think that that's really helped us to position ourselves, to remain top of mind, to create sort of a goodwill equity, as I like to call it, with a lot of the people in our community. And once they were hiring again, they picked up the phone and said, "Hey, Keen, it'd be great if you could support us because we're hiring again. And let's get you on board."
What you just said is super important. So I want to just laser in on that for a second, because I believe the companies that will come through this difficult period of, 2020 and extending into 2021 are the ones who are doing exactly what you've just highlighted, provided, of course, you can manage your cash flow to, stay in business during, a time of decreased sales. But your focus on essentially community building is what you're doing. You are delivering this webinar series, you're adding value to your, but they could be clients, they could be potential future Keenies, as you call them, right? They could be, but talent acquisition professionals, recruiters who can tap into your continuing education, which builds your relationship with them, which builds that brand equity that you were talking about. And I think just massively elevates your standing and your reputation in the marketplace, right? Because even if you're not immediately monetizing that, because what you're doing is investing in those relationships, and that will surely come back to you, right? Sooner or later, that's going to come back to you in the form of, new business or clients. Have you seen that happening yet? Or like, what's been for you the sort of benefit of providing that, that service?
Well, it's always a bit tricky to say, well, I did this and then along the line this happened, right? But I think, if you'd ask me in the team, et cetera, that it has definitely provided quite a few of the opportunities that we're currently, or some of the deals or some of the projects we're currently working on. I think, like I said in the beginning, I'm a really strong believer in the networking thing and being transparent and providing value. From day one, we've said we want to build the biggest tech recruiter community, or the best, the biggest, whatever you want to call it, the most well-defined tech recruiter community out there. I think we're on a path to get there, basically. So I definitely feel that the effort and the energy and I think what to me is really important. And again, it might sound a bit cliche, but there's a certain type of authenticity about it, I think, that people feel and like. Mm. So it's not that we do a webinar around employer branding and then kick it off with a sales pitch and it ended up with a sales pitch and then go hardcore to everybody who signed up to say, pick up the phone and let's do a sales thing, right? So that might not give us the most growth on the short term, but on the long term, I'm a firm believer that this will sort of bring us out on top, basically, because it's really what we do. We like what we do. And I think once we start working with companies, people also sort of feel this, right? So that we're in it to do an amazing job and we give everything that we have. And if we see an opportunity to add value besides closing a deal, then we'll do it anyway, because we feel that this could bring us more in the long run, right? Because it's a give and take thing. So like I said, the example as well. So and there's always a client relationship. There's always a commercial, like there's always sales involved, right? And that's fine. You don't have to be weird about it. Like, we're trying to make money, just as the companies that we're off that we're helping are trying to make money with their services, right? So that's fine.
Of course.
But I do feel that there's a sense of if you're sincere about what you're doing, you're authentic in trying to get people ahead in their game or in their development, and as well with the teams that we're supporting, the companies that we're supporting, that this will come back to you one way or another, either with an intro, a referral. I had to think, if you talk to this guy, or I know they have a need, reach out to them, etc. And all these things combined add up to that we're doing quite well these days, which I'm of course extremely grateful for, 100%.
Awesome. So how many people did you reach, or did you train through that period with your snackable content and everything?
Well, there was like, we had sort of two parallel streams, more or less. So we had the Keen webinars, which were free content. And I think we had close to 3,000 signups within, well, of course, we're doing a super niche, right? So I think those numbers are quite interesting. We've seen actually a steady decrease of signups in the course of the last few webinars, because I think there's sort of webinar fatigue, podcast fatigue. Now, of course, you see all the things happening on Clubhouse, right? So there seems to be a little bit less momentum. Yeah. But I think we were one of the first movers with the first lockdown. So the first few webinars we did, we had like 400 people in there from, I think, the one with the most nationality. I think we have people signing up for 26 different countries. So that was amazing. And then we had sort of the paid masterclasses, where we just asked a small amount of money, because we thought we could see if we could sort of open up this volume market with our masterclasses. And I think in total, we trained, like I said, around 300 people. We did like five or six of them, I think. So it was interesting. It was not like a cash cow or anything, right? But it was interesting. What I really liked about it as well, because like, we didn't have a lot of sort of new business then anyway. Like, my team was not working on 10 different roles, or we were not supporting all these companies. So it was what I thought was really important for our internal team as well, to work on something positive, right? And which was, we were working proactively on a new concept. We were trying things, we were failing, we were improving, we were reaching out to people, we were talking to people, and we were not talking and reaching out to people, hey, can we do business? It was like, hey, we have this concept, and we think it might be interesting for your team to join, because they're probably in a slightly lower hiring phase at the moment. So perhaps it's interesting for them to join the webinar, because, and then you can invest in them, and it's a win-win situation, more or less. So it allowed us, on different levels, to engage with our target group in the sense of recruiters who might be interesting for us in the future, and at the same time we could engage with recruitment managers, TA heads, whatever, who are usually also struggling, like, what do I need to do with my team, right? Because we're not doing any hiring, right? And we were engaging with them as well, so it was fun. There was good energy, there was creativity involved, there was buzz involved. So I think that it was fun to do, and then the team had fun, and they could sort of move away a little bit from the different situation that we were in that sense with the company in that phase, that we're not doing any hiring in that sense, not making any real money, but they could still feel they were contributing to our journey and to our story.
Amazing. I want to pick up on a few things you said, but first, just a couple of examples from my experience to support the value of what you're doing. Years and years ago, I had audio. CD training program, right? Where I know people really don't use CDs anymore. So this was probably 12 or so years ago, maybe 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I brought this training series, and it was called Recruitment Masterclass. Cool. And I sold this on my website, and with some marketing effort. And by itself, it really didn't make very much money. I made, I don't know, several thousand, let's say, but nothing to get really excited about. But every CD that went out was like you never know what impact this is going to have because people you know, connect with you. And like there was companies all over the world who are using my CDs to train their recruiters. And then over the years, I've had so many recruiters like reach out to me on LinkedIn or what by email and say, by the way, my very first recruiting job, you trained me, even though we never met. We used to go into the boardroom and we'd listen to the CDs and we'd discuss them and we'd do role plays and stuff. What became one of my biggest ever clients is a company called Amoria Bond, who are also based in Amsterdam, which is why I spent quite a bit of time there. They bought the CD program. One of the founders listened to it and really liked it. He reached out to me several conversations later, introduced me to the other founders, and that kicked off a sort of 8 or 9 year relationship where they became my biggest ever client.
Yeah, amazing.
That little CD program. So when you're doing these webinars or, you know, putting this content out there in whatever format, you never know the impact it's going to have sort of for the long term in building relationships and building your brand. It's super valuable. So it seems to me for you, I can see two, like if I was in your shoes, I can see two big challenges. One, with regards to client development, I'd like to ask you about this because how do you have to catch your client at the right phase in their growth trajectory, right? So how do you go about your own business development?
Yeah, good question. Well, there's a few things like in our home market, the Netherlands, we obviously, because we've been in business for quite some time. There's quite a network here, obviously. But in the Netherlands, we also help quite a few corporates as well. Like then they're mostly not sort of in the high hyper growth scaling phase, but more in a sort of transformative phase, which has been for me. And I think sometimes I even see it in the tech startup scene. Like, oh my God, you're working with corporates. And I mean, I actually love working with corporates as long as there are cool people working there. We have the right mindset and want to like to progress our teams, right? So we've been quite lucky as well that the partnerships have been with scale-up companies, tech companies, but also with some corporates to really lay sort of the infrastructure and the base on which we are building our other business as well. And specifically around your question it's usually like you said, it's like they're picking up some money, but of course, before they actually picked up the money and signed the deal, they're already thinking about designing the plans and the ideas. So once we have the money, what should our organization look like, our org chart, and so on. So I think there's a few things. So of course we keep track as well. So who's picking up money? Who's there? What are their ideas? Do they need to build their sales teams first because their product is already amazing? Or are they really still focusing on tech, et cetera, et cetera? So we just keep track of
how do you keep track? How do you keep track of this? Are you like buying databases like Crunchbase or that sort of thing? Or how are you tracking who the startups are and what stage they're at?
Yeah, well, like in the Netherlands, there's like a few sort of well-known VCs who usually take care of the chunk, or at least are involved in the deals which are ongoing. So we try to keep track of them. Of course, I know quite a few of them as well. So sometimes we have chats of what's going on and what you're struggling with, and etc. So that's right. One way how we deal with it. Like, but it could also be like newsletters from like there's different platforms you keep track of what's going on and so on. So that's one aspect. We also have we have our own people who we outplace with our clients, let's say our Keenies, and around it we also have sort of like a flexible layer of freelance contractor recruiters. We also sometimes put on assignments if they need to upskill or they have a really specific domain knowledge or whatever. And some of them have like extremely good networks. So they usually go from one hot startup to another hot startup, similar to what I saw happening, let's say, 5 to 5 years ago in Berlin. So I think it to answer your question properly, I think it boils down to mostly network. To see what's going on, who's investing in a new TA or VP in the people front and so on. And I would say 60 to 70% of our new business, it's declined a bit because we've grown a little bit. I would say like the first year, more than 90% was a referral, new business. So, hey, have you talked to these guys? They know what you're talking about. I think that's declined a little bit to, let's say, but still 50 to 60% is warm introductions. Hey, they've done a cool job here. It's worth talking to them. And then so you pick up new projects along the way, basically. And of course, then we've used our webinars a little bit as well as a bit of lead generation, trying to provide cool content also in the form of newsletters, or we've opened up all the webinars that we've done and they're downloadable content. So sometimes we push out also based on knowledge, right? So hey, you and your team might be struggling or dealing with these issues. If you give this some thought, check out our content here. Might be interesting for you. If you ever want to chat, feel free. So. Mm-hmm. I do know that, and I don't know the UK market really well, but I do know what I see as sort of the Anglo-Saxon hardcore sales approach. That's not something I've been brought up with in the Netherlands, specifically up with Young Capital, where my former employer, basically there my task was every year close two big deals, right? So then big corporate, national-wide or European deals. So for me, doing sales has always been like really creating a network in and or around a specific company and then making sure that you are there at the right moment in time when they need to close a deal, basically. And that's, I guess, up to a certain point what we're trying to do in the Netherlands as well. Like I could pick up 2, 3, 4 clients in 1 year and we could have an amazing year. You know what I mean? So I don't need 100 small clients. I'd rather be... Yes. More strategically involved, be of added value for a longer period of time with cool companies, really getting an understanding of what it is, where are they going, and what, because I think it's always a tailor-made approach almost, right? So some people, I don't know, they need to scale their business in Poland, some need to do it in Lisbon, some need to do it in the Netherlands. Some people ask me, hey, we're scaling our people team with 20 tech recruiters, can you support us with that? Some other people say, hey, we're doing site reliability engineers, we can't find them, can you support us in Lisbon with 10 of these profiles? So every, like, no, there's no client the same, there's no assignment the same. It could be similar, obviously, right? So then we can, like, that's of course a cool thing with growing your company a little bit. You can say, oh, we have these people with this domain expertise, might be interested to push them forward here. That's, I think, the good thing about sort of growing your company and getting ahead, basically. But that, I guess, is it's a network of VCs, but also within talent, basically, so VP of talent or recruitment managers or whatever, and keeping track of them. What we've also seen happening quite a lot, and that's also something to do with the fact that we've been now in business for 3 years, that people that we placed in a certain position, I think something you referred to earlier as well, who we placed somewhere as a senior recruiter has grown into a lead role or a manager role at a different company. And then they call us, hey, Keen, what's happening? I need to grow my team. Let's have a session, right, to see what we can do together. And I think those are, I think, the strongest benefits, but also the most fun things around sort of the community that we're trying to create, right? So that they really come like, oh, I'd love to work with you guys. Let's see what we can do. And then I think those are usually the biggest compliments, and not per se for me, but I think moreover for our delivery team, we just keep track of everybody. There's so many touch points. There's so many times that we are in contact with them, even after we've placed them, say, how are you doing? What's going on? And not just because, not only like an after sales pitch type of call, right? Like, hey, how are you doing? Chit chat. So can we do business? But like, I think, and then you could also argue, of course, that leaves us out in the sense of scalability. But from a human perspective, I feel that has really brought us to where we are currently.
So let me just drill down on that a little bit deeper, because I think this is an area that many recruiters are not good at. And I'm probably the same. I'm more of a hunter. I love, you know, winning new business and new projects, new ideas. And I'm not always good at the relationship building, you know, looking after people after I've placed them, let's say. And it sounds like you guys are doing a great job of that, which is very smart, because essentially you're placing who could be your future clients, right? You said there's many touch points and the team really keep in close contact after they, what are those touch points? So what's the kind of, what does that actually look like in practice? How do you make sure that once you've placed someone, you're able to continue nurturing that relationship?
I think there's probably two, like, let's say, paths that we have here. So one, clear KPIs. So have a touch point the next year with somebody that you've placed, 1 week, 1 month, and so many months, etc. Which is just monitored, put in our calendars, have a chat, right? Informal, just check out how people are doing. Everybody loves attention. So just reach out, have a casual chat, and you'll know after the second, third time, there's not so much, I don't know, stuff to talk about. And of course, like, it should not be like, hey, again, how are you doing? But you just want to build upon a relationship. And at the same time, obviously, the people that we've been working with, and some, of course, there's a lot of people as well that don't get placed, right? But we are still in contact with them because we've tried to place them at, and that obviously also happens. But they also end up in our database, more or less. And they also receive like, hey, you might have missed the last webinar. It's just been freed up. It's quite cool contact. Check it out. So I think the red line between most of the stuff that I'm talking about today is really that we try to be of added value. And it sounds a bit slick, but in the sense is that we're trying to support people in their growth, basically. And usually in the beginning, there's a really high peak, right? That they're really curious, really eager, and they really, really want to learn. And well, then they usually use this to make a next step in their careers, in their career, and they end up in a new situation. And then it could well be that the next year or next 2 years, they're fine, they're growing into that job. They might not per se need this external input for that learning in that sense. But then, like, I was just talking to somebody the other day who we've placed in the first quarter that we were in business at a cool hypergrowth company in Berlin, N26. And then reaching out again, so how are you doing? And you can just see they're in the next phase of their careers, basically, of their career. They're coming back and they just want to spar a little bit, and I might play a role in it, I might not. Frankly, I don't really care. I'd love to. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I don't need to, right? For me, it's not a forced situation that I now need to do this for the people, because we're trying to enable them to make the right choice in their career, right? Yeah.
Awesome. What do you feel has been your biggest learning or your biggest mistake, if we can put it that way, having, you know, founded and scaling your own company, that you would do differently if you had a second chance?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess it's one of the benefits, because we've co-founded this company with three people. And that's something I've learned from my former employer. That then you don't end up in two different sides, right? I want to do this. I want to do this, right? Because you're always with three, right? So every major decision that you're making, strategic decision that you're making, you need to align, right? And if my other two business partners say, "Hey, Duke, that idea that you just pushed is completely crap, like, stop doing it," then I can let it go, basically, right? But if it would be just, I guess that would be quite a different situation if it would just be the two of us, because then you would have, yeah, but I think it's a good idea, yeah, but I don't think it is a good idea, and it's not too easy to get to a solution, more or less. But at the same time, that I'm quite sort of entrepreneurial, creative. I like new business ideas and so on. So if I think we've made a mistake or something, perhaps that I would do differently if I would do it again. Perhaps even do more focus, more niche, more solid on one razor sharp proposition. So I feel that from day one we've been doing this RPO, but we also put a lot of effort in our marketing around the Keen Academy. If you're just beginning business, you know how it works. You need to get cash flow. You need to get the engine rolling, right? So you'll also pick up some other things along the way. And I think from a proposition perspective, I think not too many people know that from day one we've been doing that RPO really strongly as well with quite a few of our clients, and perhaps I would do that slightly different in terms of our proposition. So that's one learning. So like I really I'm a big fan of focus, basically.
Yeah, for sure. So that makes total sense. So one more quick question. I read in your bio, you have a quote from Richard Branson, "Screw it, let's do it." What's the business book that has had the biggest impact on you that you recommend the most?
Good question. I always struggle tremendously with business books, I have to admit. No, but it's just that, like, usually I get started and then I put it away and then I start again and you put it away. And then, so it usually takes me a lot of time to get through a book. Like that's basically, that's very different for me if I'm on a holiday and I'm reading a novel or whatever, a biography or something like that. So I have a big stack of business books besides my bed, but it's been there for quite some time, to be honest.
All right. Yep.
I love, but there's one book actually which I absolutely love, and it's from Ivan Sunar, the founder of Patagonia. It's called "Let My People Go Surfing." I've read it a few times, and I've had that book for quite some time as well. And it's really about, I think, providing people with freedom and giving them trust to do what they think is necessary to get the job done. Because if you're focusing on the things that they shouldn't be doing, then you could ask yourself the question, are these the people who are really a good fit with my company, and do they have I put across my vision good enough? Are they really sort of on the same journey and path as I am? And of course, I can't expect from employees to do the thing or to have the same engagement as I have as a founder. But I feel that you need to provide people with freedom to let them excel and then make the best of themselves, and therefore being the best possible ambassador for the company, and then basically have revenue, sales, business development follow, but also in that order and not the other way around.
Well said. That's awesome. I'll check that book out. I've not heard of that one. So that's one of the reasons.
It's a classical business book, but I love it. It's an amazing story.
Fantastic. So listen, if people want to reach out to you, Doka, and get either whether they want to join your team or whether they want to find out about your academy, what's the best way of them doing that?
Yeah, just hook me up on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way. Our recruiters are, I think, spend usually slightly too much time on LinkedIn. But yeah, just hook me up, send me a message or an invite for a chat. I'm open for everything, and I think that's the easiest way to go about it. So either go to We Are Keen on LinkedIn or on our website, obviously, or go to my LinkedIn profile, Doeke Geertsma, or find We Are Keen, whatever way is easiest. My number is there, my email is there. And just drop me a message to see what we can do. Love to connect. I think that's one of the coolest things of being in our space. I'm curious. I'm a curious mind, so I love meeting people. And it was a pleasure meeting you as well, Mark. So thanks for the invite and for the chat.
Yeah. So all the links will be in the show notes, so you can reach out to Doeke. Thank you for your time today. Really stimulating conversation. So until we meet again, thanks very much.
All right.